Welcome to the final episode of Psychedelic Therapy for this year. While 2020 has been difficult in so many ways, this year brought psychedelic medicine further ahead by leaps and bounds. At Maya, we were honored to share the wisdom of 25 healers and leaders in the psychedelic world through this podcast. Today, our guests offer advice and perspectives to the therapists doing this important work. Their wisdom is at times simple, profound, and even controversial or contradictory. They speak of how to approach clients of specific demographics, how therapists might relate to themselves in this work, and what our collective responsibility is to the psychedelic movement as a whole. Most of all, across the board, our guests have expressed their gratitude. Thank you, thank you, thank you, psychedelic therapists. You can hear more from each of our guests in a full episode at mayahealth.com/podcast. Small note, unfortunately, we are not sharing anything from Ian Michael Hebert because he was our first podcast, and I did not ask him this question. He is unfortunately not included in this roundup, but his episode is very inspiring about holistic psychedelic healing. So do check that out. This episode is made up of selections from previous podcasts. And so the format is that I will introduce each guest, and then you will hear them speaking, in most cases, directly to you, the psychedelic therapist. Enjoy. Welcome to the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast, a weekly conversation series with leaders in psychedelic culture, designed for therapists, healers, retreat leaders, and passionate enthusiasts, presented by Maya and hosted by me, Eamon Armstrong. Today I'm talking to Dr. David Rabin, a psychiatrist, PhD neuroscientist, inventor, and an avid proponent of psychedelic medicine.
So I think what I would say is that I first commend you as therapists for being willing to do this work. I think this is incredibly taxing work. It's incredibly difficult work. It's emotionally draining as it is rewarding. And it's really important to acknowledge how difficult it is to work with some of these folks who have had such incredibly heart-wrenching trauma. And it is by no means an easy job. So first and foremost, I commend all of you for devoting your lives or any part of your lives to doing this work. So thank you. I think the second thing, and probably the final thing that I think is extremely important to keep in mind, is that we've tried to do this before. In the 60s, 70s, and 80s, when these medicines were first surfacing into the collective awareness, we kind of messed it up. And we messed it up because we were not respecting the medicine. We were not respecting the power of the medicine and how incredibly, incredibly transformative some of these medicines are. Transformative for good and for bad. Psychedelic medicines do not necessarily give people good experiences all the time. They can be incredibly powerful and good experiences, but they can also be terrifying experiences for people. They can actually be so terrifying that they can re-traumatize people. And people have killed themselves or committed atrocities, unfortunately, following psychedelic experiences, usually, in all cases, when they're not delivered in a safe context. And so that in the 60s, 70s, and 80s created a huge problem because it led to ultimately the unfortunate banning and restriction of a lot of these substances, which MAPS has now spent 35 years fixing so that we can now use these medicines in practice, starting with ketamine and now going forward into MDMA and psilocybin, looking at the next, 2 to 3 years as they will become legal for doctors and therapists to use as well. And so I think the main thing that I would leave you all with is it's very easy to have a psychedelic experience or a powerful mystical experience or a healing experience yourself, and to then call yourself a psychedelic therapist or a shaman. However, it actually requires a lot more work to be good at that and to provide that service to somebody in a safe way where you're not putting yourself or your clients at risk. And there are a lot of people out there who call themselves psychedelic therapists who are putting patients at risk on, in some cases, a daily or weekly basis. And all of these people are jeopardizing the movement that we have right now to actually bring these medicines into the forefront of medicine for the future, which potentially, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but this could save healthcare in America. You know, it could save, depression is the biggest problem that we have right now in America. PTSD is not far behind. So they're incredibly expensive illnesses. Psychedelics could be incredible tools to help these people. And they just need to go through the traditional scientific path without us being impatient with the process and trying to rush it and making mistakes. So I think the most important thing here is to remember that, is to remember to be patient with the process. We have been impatient before. We've tried to rush things before. We know what happens when we rush. We make mistakes. So the most, and we hurt people, and to some extent we hurt ourselves. So I think the most important thing is to remember to be patient, remember to be compassionate to with ourselves and with the experience, to allow this to unfold as it will, so that we can make sure to not make the same mistakes that were made in the past. We can make sure that these medicines get the fair treatment that they deserve by our society at large, by the scientific community, and that people understand that when they are used properly with people who are trained in the right way, that they are extremely safe and that you can basically eliminate all the risks of side effects if they're used properly. And I think that's the most important thing right now, is to just really all of us to really, you know, bond together and make sure that we're all on the same page with how this is going to go, and that it has to be done in a very scientifically rigorous way with patient care at the center of everything. Nothing is more important than ensuring the safety of our clients.
My guest today is Irina Alexander, co-founder of Sage Institute for Integrative Health, a new psychedelic-assisted therapy clinic and training center that prioritizes equal access to psychedelic therapy.
Hey, psychedelic therapist. First off, let's take away the psychedelic part of psychedelic therapists, and let's remember why you became a therapist. Psychedelics are a great little tool to use sometimes for some people, but if you really remember why you became a therapist, it was probably to make people feel less pain and to create more joy in the world and to create more healing. So if you start with that, you can't just think of healing on an individual level. At least not in our society. If our society was a perfect, bubbly, happy place where everyone had rights and access to healing, then sure, maybe it would be different. But because our society is broken, we need to really think about the healing work that we're doing in general, but especially with the amplifying tool of psychedelics, because psychedelics can just kind of like amplify whatever's already there. And if you're planning on doing work with this sort of amplification process, you need to really do your own inner work before your own stuff is amplified and put onto this other person who you build this close relationship with. So yeah, I would just say, like, really keep doing your own inner work, really keep thinking about things from a societal perspective and what role you're playing with it in it, and what identities of yours are coming up in the relational context. And don't buy into this whole commercialization model of, yes, you know, you can pay for this dose of whatever drug and it'll make you feel better, because we all know deep down inside that the times when we've actually felt better have been when we've had a person there to hold our hand when we're struggling, and when we actually have connection to others. So I think that's what I'd say.
Today's guest is Tony Moss, a respected teacher and plant medicine advocate who's been working with ayahuasca for over 25 years.
I think the most valuable and important thing I can share is to know what it is that you're committed to and be fully committed to it. Right? And harking back to what you said earlier, what I mean by that is fully understand what's motivating you to do the work, right? And be committed to that. If it's because you want to heal trauma specifically, then learn everything there is to know and fully hold the space of trauma healing. If in that work you realize that the reason I want to heal trauma is because it will help all of humanity heal trauma, then fully be committed to that, because that intention is what's going to inform your work. If in my case, it's like I'm completely committed to the evolution of human consciousness, because that is, for me personally, where I personally have evolved to and where I feel like I can make the most difference. Well, because of that, that's what informs all of my work. My every choice, my every decision in terms of healing work is all around consciousness as a whole. And that includes the healing the traumas and the upsets that people have. But the underlying intention and foundation of my work is evolution of consciousness, right? If yours is healing childhood trauma, bringing mothers and children back together, helping families, helping veterans move on with their life, whatever it is, fully understand it and be committed to it. In other words, seek out with great enthusiasm hidden motives, because those hidden motives are going to inform your work and they will be damaging to people that you work with.
Today's guest is Erica Siegel, a co-investigator and psychotherapist for MAPS-sponsored phase 3 clinical trials for MDMA-assisted therapy.
So I will give everyone on this path the same piece of advice that Dr. Grobe gave me when I interviewed with him in 2013, actually. And he said, and it was a piece of advice that his father had said to him, which was like, no matter what you do, just keep getting credentialed. Keep doing the good work that you know you're supposed to do, because those are the things that nobody is ever going to be able to take away from you. And so nobody's ever going to question your work if your work is always within integrity. You know, and Charlie said this, which is nobody's going to take you seriously unless you have a credential after your name. There are a lot of you out there who don't want to go through the treacherous, expensive years of graduate programs and PhD programs or PsyD programs, and then, you know, horribly paid internships, et cetera, et cetera. It's worth it. Go and get the credentials, because to continue to do the work, you'll need the credentials if you want. And so that's, yeah, that's my piece of advice, which is, continue to do the work that you are, that is in line with your integrity.
Today on the show, I'm speaking with Dick Schwartz. Dick is the founder of a style of psychotherapy called Internal Family Systems. IFS is based on the idea that the mind is made up of discrete subpersonalities and that healing occurs when they are brought into harmony.
So first, let me say, I got triggered a lot in the beginning. And to my credit, I started to, instead of putting that on the client or being defensive when the client would call me on it, I started to really, what's this about? And take it to, I would trade sessions with another IFS therapist. And I would say, okay, this client really made me check out yesterday. I want to see what that's about. And I would go and we would find that part and we would heal it. And I'd come back and now I could stay with the client. So I'm a very different person because I allowed my clients to trigger me. They became what we call my tormentors, with a hyphen between the tor and the mentor. So by tormenting me, they were mentoring me about what I needed to heal. So that's just another nice philosophy of anything that triggers you in a big way. There's an impulse to try and get the person to change. But if you instead do what we call a U-turn in your focus and find the part that got triggered and stay with it, it can be a very, very healing experience for you.
Psychedelic medicine is both a science and an art. And Akoni Anthony, co-founder of Maya Health, finds his joy at their intersection.
First, I would say thank you. Thank you for the work that you're doing. Thank you for helping the people that you help. Thank you for having the awareness that... just got a little emotional there. Thank you for... Just thank you. Thank you. I would not be here today the way I am without healers like yourselves. And I am so grateful for it. So grateful. Second, I would say is look out for Maya coming soon. Look out for our software coming soon. You know, we really want to help you help others as best as possible. We're going to start off doing that through giving you the tools to take away the things that can be automated, the mundane things, the, you know, the, hey, have you followed your diet today? Or, you know, those things, you know, we want to help you keep in contact with the people you're trying to help in safe and secure ways. And, you know, that safety and security piece is at core to everything that we're doing. Second, through education and by creating a way that new practitioners, aspiring practitioners, can safely, given the times that we're in, safety sometimes meaning from a distance, being able to create a space where you can safely learn the teachings that you need in order to help the people that you want to help. And third, you know, we really want to be able to give the communities that are built through these experiences a safe space online to be able to talk and communicate to each other without fear about their experience, about what they've been through, what they're going through. I know we haven't talked much about integration, but integration is almost as important as taking the medicine itself. I would say equally as important. How you take that experience and bring it into your day-to-day life and giving the greater psychedelic community a place to be able to safely and securely share those thoughts and those ideas, those very deep and intimate thoughts and ideas. And for practitioners out there to have a better way than, you know, maybe a Signal chat to keep in contact with the people that they help. Because those little check-ins are important to ensure that the people that you're helping are successfully integrating their experiences. And that I know it's so important too. And yeah, just thank you. Thank you to all of those practitioners out there. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Today I'm speaking with a spiritual doula, Maria Teresa Chavez. The former therapeutic director of Crossroads Ibogaine Treatment Center has gone all in on integration.
Yeah, I would first and foremost say to really listen, you know, to spend as much time as you can in connection to whatever you believe runs this whole thing. You know, to talk to your ancestors and to find your favorite place in nature where there's no external interference, where you can really also get so clear and so in touch with the part of you that wants to be of service, and really tuning into what is mine to do. What is mine to do? Because there are so many facets to this, and not all of it looks like becoming a shaman, you know, or serving medicine. There's a lot of different facets, and we need all those. We need the storytellers, you know, we need the researchers, we need these peer-to-peer listeners. We need it all. And so I would just say again, be in the listening. And not moving from the mind or from the ego, but really just watching what unfolds in front of you. A ceremony led to that invitation, led to doing my really deep work, my initiations, my like really finding out what I was made of, and then led to, you know, ceremony after ceremony after ceremony, working with just some of the most humble people I've ever met, you know, and no part of me in that said oh, I want to do this. I just said, you know, I keep getting invited to show up in a good way and to pray, and I'm receiving benefit. I'm healing with every single, you know, time I sit down to pray. And so, yeah, I'll just say follow that for yourself. Whatever is continuing to bring you healing and to bring you joy versus your ego, your mind that tells you, wow, it'd be really cool to do this thing. Just follow the breadcrumbs. Mm.
Are you curious about psychedelic medicine for addiction and people in recovery? Well, today's guest, Dr. Charles Flores, has spent 25 years exploring transpersonal psychology and substance abuse disorders.
I think that whether or not, if you are a psychotherapist or any professional, or if you're not, that you need to get some training and some competence in understanding addictions, because it's not just anything. Yes, the medicine can do amazing healing. Part of the challenge is that many times people who come in, it's like, oh, well, I can do, it's like some therapists, you know, they put an entire list. I'll do grief, I'll do anxiety and depression and this and that and the other. It's like, well, we're not all good at all those things, right? Sometimes we need to get really clear about what we're skilled at. And so many times, you know, it's not just the medicine is magic. And so I'll take all comers. It's like, okay, yes, this could support your addiction stuff, but then you want to have after this a lot of other kinds of support to continue the work. And to have those, so the sitter or somebody would have to have enough knowledge to know that this isn't not an all-inclusive, like whatever, even if it's a BOGA or something that is seems like directly targeting the receptors for opioids, it doesn't mean that that's going to solve it, right? There needs to be a lot more time with integration and with people who understand addiction. Even with a BOGA, we see this issue, like people go to other countries to take a BOGA. They go to, you know, Canada or Mexico. They do 5 days or 2 weeks there, and then they go back home. And their environment is not conducive for them to continue. So they don't have cravings for a while, but as soon as that wears out, the cravings start to return. They have no skills to actually manage the addiction as it starts to come back. So very often people come back home without any support. So I think that's really the thing. If you're going to work with addiction, that you want to understand that this is a marathon, not a sprint. It's not like somebody's just going to take the have this or even two or three ceremonies or whatever experiences and they're going to stop having an addiction. You want to have a team of skilled people and preferably even like the environment they come back to is got to be different. They came in and they were using alcohol and drugs, whatever. Are you sending them right back to that? Do they know anything else? You know, they go to this foreign country and they come back to the States and they're back in where they were. There's no change. You know, so I think that's really it. It's really even a larger premium on integration. But integration here is really some, it's not necessarily all mystical work and, you know, interesting and, well, mind expanding. Some of it's got to be nuts and bolts, like, you know, how you restructure your day. What do you do with yourself in your free time? What do you do? You know, all of those things. Who are you spending time with? Who are your friends, et cetera, et cetera? It just goes on and on. So I think that's really my advice. It's really looking at integration as being the more about the solution than just having the experience.
Today, I'm speaking to Kevin Franciotti, founder of Psychedelics in Recovery, a fellowship of individuals in 12-step programs who wish to use psychedelics and plant medicines as part of their recovery.
I would say that psychedelic therapists are probably the best equipped people to handle this type of client and this type of work, because in the field of addiction treatment, compassion is often in short supply. People can empathize, people can attempt to put to look at the client on the other side of the table as being someone who is willing of their time and energy, but it's more it's rarer to find somebody who can compassionately emote in the same way and actually feel like a partner in this fight. And psychedelic therapists are the right types of people for that work.
Today, I'm speaking to Bia Labate, the executive director of Chakruna, a popular psychedelic website and research institution. She is also the public education and culture specialist at MAPS and adjunct professor at the California Institute of Integral Studies.
What I want to say to the psychedelic therapists, I want people to think about this concept of trauma. And maybe that's anticlimax for all that I was saying before. But I feel this concept is a bit loose, you know. As an anthropologist, and again, my PhD, kind of more boring scientific hat, I feel this concept has been a bit, you know, over, how do you say that when it's overrated? Like, it's become too diffuse. I'm a little bit bothered. So I'm not a psychologist, although I'm married to one. And both my parents are psychologists, and I did therapy over 10 years. So I consider that I have a lot of bonus in the world of therapists because I have a lot of them around me. And therapists often think they are so smart and they're smarter than everybody else. There's that. I also teach with, you know, in a school of psychology of the East-West program in CIIS. So I invite psychologists, I invite you, psychedelic therapists, I invite you, bright new mind, I invite you, full of energy, want to come to psychedelics, feeling great, want to join the cause, want to join the movement. I think we can refine this concept of trauma. And trauma has become something that is kind of, you know, everything is trauma and everybody has trauma. And here is a bit like, I talked this with my wife and we get into arguments about it. There's areas that we don't agree. Because I also feel there's a lot of privilege in this notion of trauma, but I think that's kind of thing that people, you know, don't like here. But in Brazil, like, I don't know, if I want to say everything that happened to me in terms of violence, I carry a lot of trauma. Yeah, but we don't go around saying I have trauma. And what she says is that you should. You should, like, understand that you have trauma and that some reactions you're doing are, you know, due to that trauma. And what I say is I think there's a lot of... There's poor people, and, you know, it's not my case. I was not brought up on those conditions, but Brazil is extremely poor, and, you know, I don't think poor people are saying, oh, I have trauma. So I just, you know, I would like to explore this relationship between trauma and privilege and just also refine the category of trauma. What is it? So if something bad happens to me, is that a trauma? Like, I got a gun pointing at me several times, and, you know, I had other things. That's a trauma. And I feel, you know, I would like to understand better. I don't think it's wrong. It's just unclear. Also, the very idea of PTSD, I think we should better say, not to the psychedelic therapist, but to the philanthropists and to the leaders of the movement, let's invest money in trying to refine and study better this concepts of trauma, PTSD, and racial trauma as well. Racial trauma is very underlooked, and I believe it's real. And Dr. Monica Williams, she's a part of our team and a great friend, and I have curated a special edition with her on equity, diversity, and access. And a few authors called the attention of the need to study racial trauma, that has been overlooked in the DSM-5. So I think for the psychedelic therapist, that's where the homework is, understanding more all these concepts, trauma, PTSD, racial trauma, offering an original contribution on that field is something that we very much need as this movement grows and blossoms.
Today, I'm speaking to Lauren Taus, a licensed psychotherapist and a yoga and meditation teacher based in Venice Beach, California. In addition to modalities like cognitive behavioral therapy, family systems work, mindfulness, and somatic techniques, she also offers ketamine-assisted psychotherapy when she feels that it's appropriate for her clients.
You are needed. We want you. Stay in your own heart's questions. Know that there are many, many great teachers, but that you ultimately will have the answer for what the expression will be. Trust in that. Explore different books and articles and podcasts and talk to the people who are doing it. And go do it. Go do it. Your unique energetic signature is what will invite people in. I quickly populated a very full practice because I just, like I said, when I'm working, I'm just being. I'm just being. And it's the isness that allows people to relax. As a human being, I have plenty of efforting and humanness and all the stuff. But when I'm working, like, I am just there and activating the tools that I've learned along the way. I've learned a lot of things, but it's just coming very naturally for me. And when those gates open for you, whomever you are, the people will come. Be you. That's the medicine. That's the real medicine.
Today, I am speaking with trauma specialist Bessel van der Kolk, the best-selling author of The Body Keeps the Score, a beloved book about healing our deepest wounds.
What I most like to say, and I think I'm very glad that my team in Boston actually seems to be pretty good at that, is to really be there with the people you work with and give it your all. Just be there totally, but also observe what it does and what it doesn't do. Mm. I find that people tend to have a tendency to become religious about things. Say, we have found the answer. And what's very clear to me is that different people respond to different things. And that up to now, it looks like, you know, I don't have all the data, but overall, our MDMA subjects in our study have done extremely well and surprisingly well. And so people have an enormous life force, and these drugs can unleash those life forces, and we are really servants to the life forces. But what I also very much would like people to do is to observe what changes, what shifts are being made. How have people's relationships changed? What's their relationship to work like? What's their relationship to sleep, to food, to sex? How do these things change? And as long as we get stuck with diagnosis, does it change PTSD? Does it change depression? We're really not measuring what changes in the core makeup or the soul, if you will. So what shifts inside? And I think some of the things you mentioned, like your cat, I think that was a very important issue, that you were able to not make it about you, but to make it about, I'm just part of this experience, and it allows me to just be there, to be a servant to this larger experience. So I hope that a lot of people will be very articulate about what their experiences are and to what degree you can generalize from one person to another.
MDMA therapy for veterans suffering from PTSD has gotten a lot of attention in the world of psychedelic medicine lately. Meanwhile, Jesse Gold is bringing veterans to South and Central American retreats for ayahuasca healing with his nonprofit, the Heroic Hearts Project.
Well, thank you. Especially a lot of these underground healers have been keeping the flame alive, in the U.S. and have really informed a lot of the research and just everything that's going on right now. And that's, a lot of the, like you said, have risked their own professional careers, their own livelihood, and that takes a lot of courage. Again, that's that warrior spirit that I'm talking about, that's not necessarily just in the soldier. I think if you're going to work with veterans, if you're hesitant about it, then maybe reach out to another veteran, reach out to me, and I can help out, or somebody else can help out, or some other veteran that, if you have somebody you've served that is a veteran, that can really help you with the link. But the biggest thing is, as with any other patient, don't prejudge. Understand where the person's coming from. Just because they might have been through all these wars, and even if you have different political perspectives, a lot of people will surprise you. And so it's just understanding where they're coming from and trying to find that, you're going to have completely different lives and different experiences, but there tends to always be that commonality. And so I think a lot of this is just trying to figure out, what is the commonality between us?
Today on the show, I am honored to be speaking with a healer and guide who is deeply steeped in ritual, magic, and the wisdom of her Haitian ancestors, Flori St. Amy.
I think I could be more specific about something I kind of touched on earlier, which is I think that the way to I truly believe that the way that we're going to change and support and heal the communities that we're engaged in is by looking at how we have benefited from their oppression, all of us. And also in the ways that what we call oppressing someone else has actually oppressed us as well. I don't think we can go forward without thinking about that it's not a Black and brown problem that there's racism. There is something that is taken from all of us when we no longer see one human as human. There's something about us that's no longer human too. So I think I only have that offering that before we think about how do we get Black and brown people into the room? How do we think about getting all the, start treating Black and brown people? I think all of us need to just start thinking, well, how might I miss oppression in the room because I am invested in that oppression? That oppression specifically, I haven't learned to see that it's harmful because it's been beneficial to me, or I just never experienced it as harmful. I say slow everything down. All the good intentions aren't enough. I think it requires a real reflection and awareness of how do I benefit from oppression? And that doesn't mean to turn around and berate yourself and feel horrible about it and be guilty and numb and hopeless, but to start to unveil the ways that you're actually not allowing people to be free because your freedom is actually still tied up. So how do we start to play around with that, be curious about it, and not have it become a sentence of some sort, an ending of some sort, but let it be the beginning of something? If I'm starting to recognize how I've invested in oppression, then at least I know that I have the ability to help someone else see their investment in oppression. And maybe it's not how they've oppressed, but how they've been oppressed. I really do think that our first step is to just sit with ourselves and let our good intentions go as best as we can and just sit with the scary parts that tell us, oh, wow, I've caused harm and that harm has benefited me. And let it just be there, let it be present. And then when we can manage that, then we can go out and say, I've caused harm. I know how that harm has benefited me. So I will recognize it when it's between us. I will see it when it's between us. It is in my awareness now. So I will not again cause harm to you. I am more available to you being free by my not trying to protect that part of me. So that's my always, always, always my invitation. Like I said earlier, if you haven't done it to yourself, do not do it to other people. If you haven't embodied that freedom, please don't force it onto somebody else, because what you're forcing is probably not that.
This week's guest on the show is Belinda Aracho, and she brings powerful insight from her lineage as a Native American woman and her life experience as a powerful healer and public speaker.
You know, one of the things that I think that I would like to share is that really know where you are in your own space, in your own healing process, because that's so fundamental when you're working with a Native American individual and where they're coming from. And although you might see that we're worlds apart from each other, I think the humanness and all of that can come across if you really are sincere about assisting them and helping them through this process. This is really something that's really different, and we're all learning from each other. And to be willing to make mistakes and not hold yourself too serious, you know, talking about the humor part of this, you know, because we're all learning to work with each other again. And that's not something that has always existed, and to allow for that as well. And it's okay to make mistakes. Reach out to people. People have questions. I always offer, you know, if you're not sure about something, you know, you can send me a message or an email. I have a website, which is www.kaloga.com, and people can send me messages about things. I try to put all of my articles and information on there for people to understand. And, you know, I'm trying to do more blogging around issues around cultural appropriation, about policy making in this space. And so I plan to do that, you know, in the next couple of months and start posting some of that information that I've been working on.
Dr. Lynn Marie Morsky, host of the Plant Medicine Podcast, has a brilliant idea to form an association dedicated to educating medical practitioners about psychedelics.
Yes, it's pure gratitude that I would like to express to the people who took it upon themselves to get into something cutting edge that you know is going to change patients' lives for the better and setting an example for what's to come. Because the medicine practitioners that are getting into this space are going to look to you to say, wow, here are people who've gone through extra training on top of the immense amount of training it already takes to become a counselor or a therapist or somebody in this field. And then you did extra training to become a psychedelic psychotherapist and fully understand what is a very complicated area of medicine. Like, this is way more complicated than how to use Lipitor. Like, this is an entire explosive field that you've undertaken. And I don't appreciate just your being willing to do that in the field, but also what it takes for you as a person. Because I, you know, I've practiced medicine for 15 years and I cannot imagine, I'm being very frank here, cannot imagine being in your shoes for a minute, because that is so much responsibility that you take on when somebody, maybe their ego dissolves or they, you know, they're on another plane and you're the one in the room that's keeping them grounded or letting them go as far out as they need to, but you're medically responsible. Like, that's so much responsibility that I just, I'm sending out a giant debt of gratitude for everybody who has given so much of themselves to do what's so necessary for other people to heal.
Wise psychonauts have long known that the real work of psychedelic healing is in the post-experience integration. And there's no one more renowned in this field than today's guest, Deanne Adamson, founder of Being True to You.
Well, I mean, really what I just said is, I think, probably one of the most important things, but psychedelic therapies are really exciting. They do have the power to change a person's life overnight, and they have the power to change society overnight. But I would say the biggest thing that I notice is similar to what I just said, in that let's create that space for the psychedelic medicines and the individuals to have a truly fresh encounter with each other. Let's allow each other to sit with Mother Nature and to sit with these medicines and to have our own unique experiences in our own way. I think it's important that we're not mixing advocacy with therapy. If you want to be an advocate for psychedelics, great, you know, go put on that hat at times. But when you are in the seat of a coach or you're in the seat of a therapist, it's not advocacy. So I feel that people should have the autonomy to pick their own experiences, to choose when they do them and how they do them, and to have that like fresh neutral container to do integration, and have therapists and coaches that are able to sit with them and be in their experience, but not imposing our own thoughts upon how it all should be done, unless it's just more of a logistical, you know, safety thing. I think it's really important that we learn about psychedelic therapies on a general context. There's a lot of different medicines. So becoming well-informed about these medicines, becoming well-informed about altered states, becoming well-informed about the cautions and the risks and the potential outcomes. There's a lot that can become of it. Being careful what you step into and not taking on more than you could handle. You have to understand that when people go into these experiences, that they could bring up a lot of deep stuff, whether it's from their childhood, whether it's from their ancestry, whether it's from their past lives, whether it's from just their family experiences. And so I see a lot of people just getting in over their head, but pretending as if they can handle it. So I think it's important to share with clients what your specialization is and what your scope of training is and how you can help a person, but also recognizing when you have reached that edge and you can't help a person beyond that, and then you can make referrals to somebody else. As a integration specialist, in addition to your own training and becoming well-informed about all these psychedelic medicines and the transformational work and altered states and bringing the unconscious to the conscious and all the different integration tools, in addition to the training, in addition to becoming well-informed, it's also a process of personal work and transformation. As a professional, we never want to get too comfortable in, I'm the professional, I'm the expert, I know everything. No, it's humans helping humans. And so it's important that we are very humble in our own experience and we continue to do the work, but we keep our work separate from coaching or providing therapy to the clients. So when our work comes up and we notice something, because of course our clients are going to mirror our own stuff, we take a note of it in session. We say, oh, wow, that really moved me, that really triggered me, or that really excited me, that made me feel really passionate about something. We just bookmark it and we put it to the side and we don't let our own stuff come into the coaching session and we continue to do our own work. Like I said, we're putting aside our own agendas and our advocacy. That doesn't mean you can't have those projects and missions. It just means you're separating them from the integration work with the client. You're continuing to learn new tools, but don't feel like you need to learn every tool and every method. Every coach has, or counselor has, their own process and their own approach. And I think that is good when people get too many certifications and learn too many methods. I think it can just kind of scramble your practice. I feel like it's better as a integration therapist and coach when you just hone a particular practice or method versus trying to learn everything. I will tell you, I have not noticed a benefit from the people who come into our training who have 10 certifications versus the one that has one certification. So sometimes I think that feeling of inadequacy, or that just that desire to be amazing as a professional, you just keep getting more and more certifications, but it can actually scramble things and make it harder to just integrate your own work. So finding a method that resonates with you. And then also identifying what is your niche and working with clients within your niche. You don't have to just work with anyone. You can specialize in a particular area and then work with clients within that area. And then I would say lastly, to find a community for ongoing mentoring. That's something that we provide, which I would say is probably the crux of our community, is not just the training, but it's the ongoing accountability and mentoring, because there's a lot of difficult cases that come up. And I find that sometimes professionals feel that they should know what to do, so they don't want to ask. You know, some of our new students are the best because they'll come in and they'll just ask so many questions because they're so eager to keep learning. And I think our whole team has figured that out. So that ongoing accountability and mentoring and training can be really helpful so that you can process these cases anonymously together. The most important thing I would say is just to be that clear channel for clients to work with. You know, be that clear, compassionate, heart-centered coach that truly supports and accepts people without judgment and can allow them to do the work, whatever work they want to work on from wherever they are, in a non-biased way. So, gosh, there's just so many things Aim and I could say. So I hope that helps there at the end.
Have you ever wondered what it would take to create a psychedelic therapy clinic? Today's guest, Veronica Gold, co-founder of Polaris Insight Center in San Francisco, has done just that.
Yeah, thank you. So just what we've been talking about, I believe that, you know, the personal work that people are doing is the most important, you know, the work we are doing on ourselves. And, you know, talking about this work when people are, you know, listen, if you're listening to this podcast, you're interested in the potential of this healing. And so talking about it with people as much as you can, about, you know, sharing education, sharing the potential of these medicines. And, you know, furthermore, I think a lot about, you know, ethics of this work and, you know, challenges that can come up. And so having really open conversations and open conversations of what are the right practices in psychedelic assisted therapy, talking about things that go well, but as well things that don't go well. So people who are coming to this to get this treatment to know, and that as well there is, you know, the possibility of talking about it, so that there is not a shame around when something happens that will kind of create even more challenge of hiding that, so that people continue to have conversations and inviting others and creating communities that of support and collaboration rather than, you know, competition, so that we try to make, you know, everything we have an open source, sharing and supporting others to be able to do this work, because it's so needed and so many people need this healing and coming from a place of abundance rather than scarcity. So I, you know, encourage people to get as much education and experience as you can, and you know, we're always here to connect and support people. So if anyone has any questions, they can always as well reach out to me or to people in our clinic. And we want to support the development of the field and people starting clinics and practices.
Today on the show, I'm interviewing my colleague at Maya, Jessica Kadosh. She is our research manager for public health, and this has been a wonderful opportunity for me and you, our audience, to get to know her.
I suppose one thing I would love to say is keep doing the amazing work that you're doing. I thank you for being at the front lines of this movement. Given that we live in a biomedical kind of framework here in the West, without you, we wouldn't be moving where we are, for lack of a better word. I would also really just love to say, you know, just to mention that my work with Maya is equally a contribution to making sure that we introduce psychedelic assisted therapy into the world of biomedicine in the most ethical way possible. And in order to do so, we need to provide the right tools to the practitioners who are doing this amazing work. And I hope that by contributing to Maya, we can help these practitioners on a much larger scale.
Today's guest, Dara Stewart, is a shining beacon of knowledge and joy. As a PhD in molecular biology, he has gone all in on plant medicine to support his psychedelic Irish brothers and everyone else who needs to break through the blockages in their lives.
What would I like to say? Great question. I think if you've got the call to really work on yourself, follow that and just know that the work you do on yourself will benefit everybody else in the world, and that hopefully we can, you know, in this time of crisis and global crisis as well with the environment, that we can continue to work together and to really change the way mental health is looked at, and to change how we're treating the planet, to really support one another in this time of change.
Today on the show, I'm interviewing Ronan Levy, co-founder of the psychedelic healthcare company Field Trip, which offers Field Trip health centers for ketamine-assisted therapy, Field Trip Digital, including the apps Trip and Portal, and Field Trip Discovery, which, amongst other pursuits, is developing the novel psychedelic FT-104.
Thank you for listening. And I also know that we're listening. And if you have ideas and thoughts and anything along those lines, reach out, whether you want to work with Field Trip, whether you hold us in esteem, or whether you think we're the devil. It's like, that's okay. I'm always open to constructive, thoughtful dialogue. And so please reach out and keep doing what you're doing. You know, at the end of the day, I truly believe we're taking different paths, but we have the same objective. And I think there are many roads that lead there. So, you know, we support everything that you do, by and large, and just know that I'm always happy to talk, and I don't have perfect answers, but I'm always also willing to listen and continue to evolve.
Today on the show, I'm speaking to a man who is changing the narrative around plant medicine in Asia. Jonathan DePotter, founder of Behold Retreats, has big visions for the region, and it starts with helping business leaders to awaken.
There's a powerful message from you may know the guy who said it. He's passed away, unfortunately, but it's his presentation is "This is water." Do you know that one,
David? Amen? Is that David Foster Wallace?
It is David Foster Wallace. Thank you. Yep. There's a message that he shares, which I think is so powerful, which is be pro stuff, not anti stuff. I think it was either him or it was Tim Minchin, maybe. I may be getting the two confused. Apologies. But I think that message is so powerful, is to be pro stuff, be for something. Don't be against something. And it's a nuance, but it's so important, and particularly at this juncture, that, you know, I think there's so many dividing lines. As I've spent so much of the last 6 months on the phone with people in the psychedelic industry, right? And it's just incredible to understand the number of dividing lines. It's like it's beyond comical if it wasn't also tragic. Like, you would just spend hours laughing at it. But we need to, you know, we shouldn't let that get in the way of the beautiful work that we each individually want to be doing in this space. And so whatever each of us individually, you know, is drawn to. You know, this work is all about establishing our own individual moral compass and bringing that into the world in a way which is respectful of all other human beings, right? So anything that is moving away from being able to express that freedom, you know, that freedom individually is I think it's not really adding to our movement, right? And so I would encourage any psychedelic therapist to just focus upon the beautiful work that you're doing and how that's going to help people. And don't worry too much about, yeah, but he's doing this and the shamanic that and this. And the, it's just like, yeah, just focus on the beauty that you want to bring into the world and like everything else will follow. And, you know, I think Gandhi's message here is just entirely the right one, right? It's be the change that you wish to see in this world. And that's the work that any of us can do is just to elevate our own consciousness. And by virtue of elevating our own consciousness, we'll encourage those of us who are around us to take notice. They'll begin to do their own work, and that'll be the ticket. That'll be how we, you know, that's how we get the exponential result in terms of the collective elevation of consciousness. And then debates about this and that and the other is just completely a thing of the past, because it's just not the paradigm that we want to be stuck in. We want to be pro stuff, not anti stuff.
Today on the podcast, I'm speaking to Dr. Molly Maloof, a concierge and lifestyle medicine practitioner who has developed a comprehensive protocol for ketamine-assisted therapy.
So the first thing I would say for everyone is education. So there's a great website, Psychedelic Support, that offers a great network of physicians and psychologists who practice psychedelic medicine. And then there's also, they offer courses and educating doctors on how to use psychedelics clinically. And there's actually a lot of courses that are preparing doctors for the next realm of psychedelic medicine, which is MDMA and psilocybin, which are coming. So I'm actually going to be taking an online course on psilocybin and MDMA assisted therapy. And that's actually CME approved. MAPS has a ton of great resources. The Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies, highly recommend donating to them. There's also just some great, you know, I personally go to the primary literature. And so I'm going to be compiling all of that education into part of my course. And then I'm also writing a book on the topic, but that won't be out until 2022. But there's actually some good textbooks on psychedelic medicine on Amazon. They're not cheap, but there are some really good textbooks. And so I would always just say, like, the first step to all of this is just read everything you can. And then talk to people who are doing it. So I met a doctor in San Francisco who was teaching me about ketamine assisted therapy. And he's like, Molly, sublingual ketamine is incredibly safe. Intramuscular and intravenous ketamine are also fairly safe, but they require in-person medical supervision to make sure that you get your vital signs monitored. So they're more expensive and they're definitely a deeper experiences than sublingual, but they're also just, you know, you have to go to a clinic, you have to kind of go through all of that. So I would say go to a clinic and go see it. And honestly, if you're a physician or a therapist, you should definitely experience it yourself before you just decide to start administering it. I would say everybody kind of needs to know what the experience is like to even be able to explain it to people, because ketamine is a very weird experience. But yeah, I think education, I think talking to doctors, I think shadowing doctors. And then I think, you know, just direct experience is really, really valuable. MAPS is actually really big on direct experience for their trainees. So MAPS is only currently training doctors who have clinical research sites open, but they will eventually be training doctors who are going to want to open up sites. So that'll probably be within the next couple of years. So just keep tabs on MAPS, because you'll soon be able to go through the whole training process with them. And then I really believe that if you're going to do it as a doctor or a therapist, the therapeutic relationship between a doctor and a psychotherapist is important. So like when I refer people to the psychotherapist, I'm referring them and I'm talking to the therapist about why I think that they'd be a good candidate for this kind of therapy. And the therapist is also deciding whether or not, through their experience interacting with the client, if they should continue or stop the therapy. So it's really nice to just have a team around you. And you're going to be in better care if you have therapy And I personally think that everybody should get therapy after COVID. So personally, I think every single person in the country would benefit from some therapy right now because of what we've all gone through in this last year. So I think the stigma has really been lifted around therapy in a lot of cases. But I have to say that, I think that's really the big things around it.
Jonathan Sabag is building a space and solution for independent therapists who want to provide ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, also referred to as CAP, by providing a prescription service, a medically supervised location, and a community.
Well, thank you. I think that it's wonderful what they're doing. I think the courage and the passion that people are bringing to this work is inspiring. I know so because I benefit from it every day. And it's been a process working with self-employed practitioners. My psychiatrist is a self-employed practitioner who's been working in this field for a long time, and he's changed my life. So I'm sure they're changing the lives of a lot of other people. And that's what we want them to keep doing. We want them to keep bringing that passion and that work to the world in the way they do. It's really, that's what makes it special.
Thank you to all of our amazing guests who have been on the Psychedelic Podcast this year. And thank you to you, psychedelic therapists and passionate enthusiasts. It is you who makes this work possible. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And have an amazing 2021. Thank you for joining us on the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. If you enjoyed this show, please join the Psychedelic Therapy Facebook group to talk about it. You can also share it with your friends or leave a review on iTunes so more people can discover the show. The Psychedelic Therapy Podcast is presented by Maya, a platform designed to help psychedelic therapists manage and measure client journeys. You can head to mayahealth.com to learn more. The show is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide mental health or medical advice. Thanks for listening.